How do we know that trumpets or the observance of the Feast of Trumpets means what it does? For the simple reason, we can go to how it is used and termed not only in the Old Testament but the New Testament as to what trumpets actually means. We tie them in with the meaning of the other feast days, and it certainly fits. It has to do with the understanding of the end of the age in which we live. And it is that of which, of course, the Church of God in this time in which we live is most concerned about. That is the end of the age. Let me say it was something the apostles themselves wanted to know more about and asked Christ directly the question in Matthew chapter 24. They asked him that as he was making comments about the temple and what would happen to Jerusalem. He said in verse 2 of Matthew 24, one of the greatest, most profound prophecies, and the detail that was given in this prophecy that brings all of the prophecies of the Old Testament together to help us to understand what is going to happen in the end time, and then gives us an outline, as it were, to help us to understand the book of Revelation itself, which Jesus Christ himself gave word for word in vision form and in words to the Apostle John. And so we have in the New Testament two great prophecies for the people of God who live in the end time. Verse 2 in Matthew 24, he says, "Do you not see all these things? Assuredly I say to you, not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." And he was speaking specifically about the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple itself that they had just referred to. And there's going to come a time when they would be totally and completely destroyed. Verse 3, "Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, 'Tell us, when will these things be?'" What? Well, what he just said. Then they asked two further questions. "And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" These are two further very natural questions that they would ask based upon what he had been teaching them during the time of his ministry. He'd been talking about the fact that he would come back. He would be giving them parables that, such as the ruler would give talents to his servants, go away, and then come back. And he was telling them, "I will come back again, and I will bring a reward, and the Son of Man will come in the clouds of his glory." He's saying these things, not only here, but you go back to as early as Matthew 16. He's talking to them in terms of him coming back. And so they weren't quite sure exactly how it was all going to work out. They thought, here is the Messiah. Surely he would now establish the kingdom. Surely the nation of Israel, or more specifically Judah, would now become a great nation. They would be able to overthrow the oppressive Romans. And they would now become what they thought the prophecies, they saw in the prophecies, they would now become a great nation, the nation under God that will rule, that will be the key and prominent influence to the whole world. That's what they would thought. That's what they thought. And Jesus was trying to help them to understand it's not going to happen that way. He says, "I'm going away, and when I do, I will come back." And so he wanted to get that. So they're asking him then the question. Naturally, you need to understand, it is still vague in their minds. Not as clear as it is in our minds, because we've had it explained to us. We can read the prophecy of Matthew 24. We can read the book of Revelation. We can read so many other parts of the Bible. We can see then, after the 2,000 years has transpired, we now look back with a much better understanding as to how and why things will happen the way they do. And we do that not because we're so great in foretelling prophecy, we're pretty good at looking back and saying, here's what happened and here's how it's Here's how it's all transpired. And of course, we have that help from God to tell us how that has happened too. So they asked the question, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? They knew it had to be another age. What they were living under was not where it was at. And so Jesus goes on to explain that to them. And he speaks of, and I'm only going to summarize it here for you because I want to move rather quickly and cover as much territory as I can in terms of the prophecies that are here today that have to do with the Feast of Trumpets, what they mean, how we should be ready and prepared for them. So I want to cover that today. First of all, he says false Christs will come, and implying, of course, false teachings right along with it. He says wars and rumors of wars will occur. He goes on to say this. And when he says that, he says in verse 6, let me just interject this, in the last verse, last phrase in verse 6, he says, now when you see all of this, the end is not yet. So he's going to tell them about the end. But he wants to make it very clear that for the disciples who would come in the ages following, that when they would see wars, sometimes terrible wars, sometimes they would see huge deceptions brought about by whole religions claiming to be Christian. He says, when you see this, I just want to let you know, that's not the end. They say, wow, this is not the end. What is the end? That's, you can almost imagine what's going on in their minds. Then he goes on to talk about famines and disease next. And then he says earthquakes in various places. And then he says, these are the beginning of sorrows, meaning it's going to be a very sad and a bad thing, but that's not the end yet. This is what he's implying when he makes that statement. These aren't the specific end time events that he's going to talk about. These are the conditions that are in this world that develop in intensity as we approach the events of the end time. Now, he's going to talk about events of the end time, and he goes on to talk about them. He says, many will be offended, and they will betray one another. He talks about false prophets arising and deceiving many. He says that's going to happen. He talks about they will deliver you up to tribulation. I'm sorry, I skipped that one, and I should have said that, because that did happen in the first century, and he had to say that for them, to help them to understand that when this starts to happen, even within decades, sometimes it happened within weeks or months, really, of the church starting. You had incidents that we read back in the book of Acts where something like this took place. Maybe in isolated situations, but the original apostles within days were hauled right into the court again and threatened with death. Though they weren't put to death, some years later the first one was. And then years later others were. And all of the apostles eventually, so far as we know, did. And with the exception of the Apostle John. We don't have a clear view of that. But he says this was going to happen. And in many of the people who lived in the Roman Empire from time to time, within the first 50, 60 years, began to suffer persecution where a lot of this took place. But he comes down more to the end time when you get into verse 11, perhaps verse 12. And he says, and many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. I think you understand that there are a lot of different ideas today with respect to the teachings of Jesus. And so therefore they can't all be right. Jesus Christ does not believe in and speak according to the law of non-contradiction. It has to be consistent all the way through. Can't say this is, well, I'm okay with this, but if you say that, I'm okay with that, and if you want to say this, I'm okay with that, and Jesus is just fine, he's okay with everything, and I'll just die for you and everything will be okay. Now folks, Christ doesn't operate that way. If that's the case, the planets simply can't revolve around the sun the way they do. The universe does not have an order if that's the case. You got to follow it through. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be truthful. Truth is truth. Truth is as God himself understands it and knows it. And you can't have a lot of varying ideas. Doesn't matter how generous we want to be. Doesn't matter how kind we want to be, how merciful we want to be. And that's all a part of it. But that's not what I'm talking about today. I'm simply talking about the fact that there are going to be false prophets. They will rise up, and many will be deceived. Didn't say they weren't sincere, just simply says they will be deceived. Because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Notice what he's saying here. Lawlessness will abound, love of many will grow cold. He who endures to the end. What end? He who endures to the end. Let's make this point as clear as we can. What end? The end of the age. So when he's talking to his disciples that will read this down through the ages, he says you have to endure to the very end of the age. Now, this is not the specific time events that I'm going to talk about as we move on into the Feast of Trumpets. These are conditions that are in this world that will develop in intensity. However, we need to really take note of this, because false prophets did arise. They did deceive many. How many have been offended at the truth of God? How many have listened to those who proclaim different teachings, have different spirits, and some with different prophecies, wild prophecies? And how many have succumbed to other behavior, other ideas, simply because lawlessness has abounded and the love of many grew cold? What do you mean the love grows cold? Love simply is not as fervent toward God's way of life. They do not love God's way, and they have allowed the world and the influence of the world to affect them. The love of many will grow cold. And at the time of the end, there will be an elect who should endure, not give in to lawlessness, not think that the end is in some far distant future, so that we would give ourselves the luxury of putting off getting our lives back to serving God the way we ought to. You know, in this one sense, this is a picture, and that's who he's giving this warning to. This is a picture of the church of God and conditions that the church would face at the end time and the dreadful impact it would have on the church. This is what he's talking about. In fact, that we have said the same thing for decades. That's a very interesting point here. A lot of people have seen what has happened. They've experienced certain things that have happened in the church. And they've been terribly affected by it. You see people who are hurt, people who feel that something was wrong and something happened within the church. What is the natural tendency for people to do that? What is the natural tendency for people to do whenever they were a part of a church that says, hey, here's the way it is? They laid it out. Here's the law of God. Here's the way it's all going to happen. Here's what we're a part of. Here's the purpose of God. Here's what you have a chance and opportunity to be a part of. And then things started to happen to it because you had certain people and individuals within the church that Jesus said would happen. He said this is going to happen. It's not a mystery. Of course, we read that all along. We knew it was going to happen, but we really didn't know it was going to happen. We couldn't really bring ourselves to believe that it was all going to happen. And so it happens. What is the effect? It's like children who see mom and dad get a divorce. You know what they say? Or they see mom and dad fight. Or they see problems in their own family. Do you know what children say? Well, thank you very much, mom and dad. I think I'll make up my own mind now. Anybody want to argue with that? That's exactly what kids do. And if you're honest with yourself, if you're in that situation, that's what you say that. You say, I think I'll figure things out for myself. And people try to. And so they have. One starts his own organization. One comes up with his own doctrines and teachings. One has this or that idea, and this idea, whatever it is, in order to justify themselves, to do whatever they want to do. Or you can find all kinds of reasons to justify yourselves based upon what you have experienced in the past. You find a reason to do that. Okay, the people of God have experienced all that. He says this, you're going to have to endure to the end. All of this is going to happen. Now, I'm telling you beforehand, it's going to happen. But now you're going to have to endure to the end. You can't let this affect you. You can't let this get to you. You can't let this bring you to a frame of mind to where you're just going to kick over the traces and do whatever you want to do. Not going to, you know, that's not the way to go. You start going down that road, and I think you're going to have a problem. God is going to, he's going to protect his church. He says that, and you follow that all the way through, and he is going to support his church, and his church is going to be there somewhere. He has to, otherwise God can't be God, because he says he's going to do this. So you can have that kind of confidence. We have to know that that confidence is there. But I've heard this from people, my friends. I got a friend. I hope you don't mind me saying, but let me just speak very plainly. I got a friend right here in Queensland, known him for over 40 years, had a lot of good times together. He wrote me a letter some 20 years ago. I still got it. I kept the letter. He said everything, you know, we were taught is false because it didn't happen when they said it was going to happen. That was it. Didn't happen the way we said it was going to happen. You know, And we ourselves can be like that, where we say, well, I've heard all this before. What we ought to say is this. When we look at events today, when we look at what has transpired in the last 20 years, 10 years, 7 years, 1 year, doesn't matter. We ought to say this. It's happening just like we always said it would. Now, people trot out the booklet, 1975 in prophecy, didn't happen in 1975, therefore you have to be false prophecy. You know what Jesus Christ is going to say when you start holding up that booklet to him? He's going to say, I gave you 40 years warning. Don't start trotting that out in front of Christ, because he's going to tell you. Told you 40, 50 years ago. We're saying the same thing today, folks, as we've said for going on 8 decades now. 80 years. That's right. Go back, figure out when we first started saying, when the first Plain Truth came out, when the first article of the first Plain Truth came out about the return of Jesus Christ and the events that were going to happen prior to Jesus Christ returning. It's there. Now, we haven't changed that story. Not about to. We've gone over it, proved it time and time again, exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. And it is very natural for anybody in any age, as the disciples themselves ask the question, when is it going to come? And he's trying to dispel the idea in their minds that it's going to come real soon now. And even in the book of Acts, the first chapter, even after saying this, they said, are you going to set up the kingdom now? And Jesus paused and said to him, I thought I already explained this to you. About a half a dozen times I explained this to you, fellas. It's not going to be now. And so he goes away, and the angels say, what are you looking up for? What are you standing there looking up? He says, the same Jesus is going to come in the way that you just saw him go in that cloud. That's the way it's going to happen. Get up and go do what he told you to do. And so they picked up the skirts and went. And so it's hard, because everybody and at any particular point in time will say, here it is, this is it, and start to take vague prophecies, putting them together and saying, this is when it's got to be. You know, that is a failing. The greater failing is kicking over the traces altogether. The greatest failing is giving up on your beliefs altogether. The greatest failing is to allow lawlessness to abound in your life, to be affected by that, letting your love grow cold, not enduring to the end, being affected by false prophets. Now there is where you're going to run into the problem. There. We didn't have the scenario right. Or we set dates. These can be a distraction. People can be offended at the real truth that is there and not awake when the time actually comes. He said that. Now he says the gospel will be preached and the end will come. The true gospel. It's got to be preached. Why has it got to be preached? And then the end shall come. Verse 14, the gospel of the kingdom will be preached. What gospel? The gospel of the kingdom. No question about it. And then the end will come. Why has it got to be preached and the end will come? Because it hadn't been preached before. It was not preached before until this past century. And it's something that we, of course, have to continue to do. It speaks of tribulation, verse 21. I don't want to get necessarily into the some prophecies between verse 16 and 20, which are we would tend to understand as that which is applying to those who are specifically in Judea or in Jerusalem at the time prior to the temple being destroyed, and is answering that question for them then, which the church had to face at that time. And so he makes a comment regarding that. That's so I'm going to pass over that. Verse 21, then there will be great tribulation such as not have been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be. This is a one-off event that is going to occur. It is never yet, this has not happened yet. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Now this dates this. This tells you when this is going to be. This is a time that has to be shortened. And shortened by the fact that Jesus Christ has to step in and stop it from happening. And he is not going to allow the condition that he speaks of here, that there would no flesh be saved alive. He's going to stop that. He's not going to let that happen. He's going to do this, as he says, for the elect's sake. In verse 24, he says about false prophets, false Christs will arise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect, the same elect that's alive at the end time. Those who are alive and remain. Those who are alive at the end time. These are the elect who can then be deceived. And so now we have end time prophecies that he's speaking of here very clearly. End time prophecies. Now, in verse 29, he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days. Now we have a time flow here. One event after another. The tribulation, as he speaks of in verse 21, now we have immediately after the tribulation. Doesn't wait very long. The tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. So he's speaking about now a sign is going to appear. After the tribulation, he says there's going to be something else happening. Sun darkened, moon will not give its light, stars will fall from heaven. Notice in Joel, keep your finger right here, don't leave Matthew 24. We've got to tie this in because the prophecies are clear in this regard. Prophecies are very clear in Joel 2:31. The sun, Joel 2:31, I'll give you a second to find Joel. I had a friend who's had a son whose name was Joel, and they always had to try to find him too. Joel 2:31. The sun shall be turned to darkness, the moon into blood, before. Notice how this is structured here. Notice the time event. Before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. Now this is going to tell us something here. If you put this together very clearly, that you have, according to Matthew 24, you have the tribulation of those days, you have the sun and the moon darkened and so on, as it were. This happens before the great and awesome day of the Lord. Now that's how we understand that the day of the Lord is to come after the tribulation of those days. As it says, you have another thing taking place, the sun and the moon, etc., stars falling from heaven. That is not a literal thing, of course, but it appears as if stars are falling. That's the way it looks from Earth, put it that way. Now verse 30, now you have something here. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming from coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Now here is the main event of the day of the Lord. Jesus Christ returning. He will send his angels, in this event here, he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So now you have this trumpet. Which one is that? When he's gathering his elect. What elect? We already answered that. Those who are alive. As Paul referred to them, they are alive and remain on the earth when Jesus Christ returns. God's people who are ready for the resurrection of the dead. Those who live then, well, if they live then, of course they will be alive. That doesn't make sense, does it? Those who are remaining alive will be caught up together, and wherever they are, and they're going to be resurrected from one end of heaven to the other. That means the heaven as we know it, the clouds where the birds fly. Doesn't mean in space. It means on the earth, wherever they may be on the earth, they're going to be gathered together. Now the rest then, from verse 32 on, is Christ's own commentary on the prophecy itself. That ends the prophecy. Verse 31 ends that prophecy. Verse 32 begins his commentary on the prophecy and some very important things that he wants us to understand about that. So he is giving these events then as a prelude to the day of the Lord, as we read up to that. The sign of the Son of Man will appear. He's going to send his angels with the sound of a trumpet. And that trumpet is the last great trumpet. It is one of seven. And that when these seven sound, when these seven trumpets begin to sound, we are in the day of the Lord. Now, this is what the Feast of Trumpets pictures. This is the meaning of the day. The day when the trumpets of God are blown and the events described in the trumpet begins to happen, and the major events of those trumpets that will occur at the seventh one is the actual return of Jesus Christ. But let me make this as clear as I can for you. The trumpets are then the direct and powerful intervention of God in this world to make himself known and declare himself as the next ruler of the world to people who did not want to know him. And so he's going to declare it. And you have seven of them. The first six have some very serious things that are happening. The seventh one is when he actually, literally returns, puts his feet on the earth, along with those people who have been resurrected and who will meet him, and then go to the place where they are supposed to go. And that is then the Mount of Olives, as we find in Zechariah 14, verse 4. In that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. Now, let's talk about where we are now. I know that's a big question in our minds, and we're going to do the best we can to help us to understand this in terms of the Bible. Jesus said what would happen in Matthew 24, what would happen in the world, not just to the nations of Israel. However, we can put scriptures together. We can put the prophecies, because it does affect us. Let's go to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation 6. And you have seals. They're not the kind that swims in the water. These are seals, like a seal on a scroll that has to be broken, and the scroll is open, and what is written there then happens or occurs. That's that kind of a seal. And these seals are then broken, and they're opened. Now, you have these what is written or what is prophesied by these seals being opened are in the same order that we read in Matthew 24, of the conditions that would exist leading up to the tribulation. The first one is false prophets, the white horse. These are the four horsemen, incidentally. And I think we've seen enough about that. These are the four horsemen, and you can draw a parallel, if you wish, with these first four seals, then with the first four conditions that you find Jesus telling us about in Matthew 24. The second one is war. Peace was taken from the earth, as it says. And the people should kill one another. And there was given to him, that is this particular horseman, a great sword. Now, verse 5. You might say, well, we've seen all of that. You have seen all of that. And you've seen part of what you're about to read in verse 5 and 6. But I want to tell you something. You haven't begun to see that yet. And I am going to step out and say, this is just about where we're at right here in terms of the conditions getting so much worse than they ever were. And it's a very interesting way in which this is described. Let's notice. When he opened the third seal, a third living creature said, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a black horse. And he sat on it, had a pair of scales in his hands. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine. The third thing that Jesus spoke of was famine. And here we have a shortage. Food is scarce. Then you have, going on down to verse 7 and 8, death through sword and hunger. But I want to focus in on the third one to help us understand a little bit more where we are today. Let me just give you a little bit of background. But up until now, agriculture has made enormous strides in food production, some of it with genetic engineering, some of it with modern farming methods, some of it with methods mainly. We've been able to produce an enormous amount. Going back from the sometimes local famines of the 50s and the 60s, now we begin to see things more and more happening in Africa, more because of conflict than anything else. Yes, there is a drought and so on. This is describing something different here. It doesn't say there isn't food. It just says the prices are going up. That's what it means here when it says, be careful. Don't waste it. Why? Only because it costs so much to produce it? No, oh, it does cost more to produce what we're eating. Yes, indeed it does. But we're in a situation right now where, and I'll give you just one or two examples of this, that the farmers today with the removal of the Australian Wheat Board, now this is quite significant, have been taken over by multinational corporations, and the government, both parties, are behind this, in which this is going to be done now by full, as I said, multinational corporations to market one of the greatest commodities that the earth can produce, and that is wheat. And yeah, we may have had a problem producing it. Now it's a matter of marketing it, where a few people are going to get very, very rich, and the people who produce it aren't going to get the money. Now, I'm just simply telling you what's happening on a rather large scale, but let me put it in a way that I think you might understand. There was a strawberry farmer up on the Sunshine Coast who says, I'll let my strawberries rot before I sell them to Kohl's and Woolworths for 40 cents a punnet. How much have you paid for them? Okay, where did all the money go? Because they got them already packed. I don't know if they were delivered, but already packed with the plastic around them, ready to put on the shelf. Paid 40 cents for them. I thought I was getting a good deal the other day when I saw one for reduced, $1.40. Guess what? Half of them were bad. They've been sitting around for a long time because nobody's going to pay $2.40 and $3.40 for them. Where's the money go, folks? Let me tell you where the money's going. This is a short explanation. Because you have huge corporations now who got to make the biggest profit they can. Now, what profit they had before has been invested. And those investments, with whatever institutions they've been invested in, have in turn invested that money again. And that money has been invested again. Does anybody know where that money is? They don't know where that money is. They just know this, that the mortgages are not now being paid, and somebody's going to wind up holding the bill. And guess who's going to be paying for it? You're going to be paying $2 more a punnet for strawberries than you should just to pay for that. Have I made that simple enough? Okay. Now, that may have been oversimplified and maybe not true in every last little respect. Somebody could take me to task on, but that generally explains to you we've got a financial system here in which the few will get richer. Those who produce it will not get what it's worth, nor will the people who are laboring will get what they deserve either. The Bible speaks of it in the book of James, the 5th chapter. You have defrauded the laborer. We have a lot of sins that are taking place in our country, in the United States, and the chickens have come back to roost. It's all going to happen. Now, look, whether or not they bail out some of our... Well, they inject money into the system once again to keep the money flowing for credit through buying up the pretty bad debts. Doesn't matter. Once they do that, somebody's got to pay for it. Who's going to pay for it? Me and you. We're going to be paying for this. And we're going to be paying for it more and more. How much has groceries gone up in the past year? 2 years. Have you noticed that? And we're not the only ones. Now, we are entering into a time when it is so serious. In fact, at the Feast of Tabernacles, I am going to give a Bible study on the financial system of the United States. I'm sorry, of the world today. I'm sorry, not the United States, of the world today, as opposed to the financial system that's going to be in the millennium, in the world tomorrow, and show you the difference in the two, and show you why there's going to be prosperity and plenty for everybody for 1,000 years where ours will fail. And that's because certain laws that are not simply not being abided by. Now, the German finance minister said this past week, we're asking the question, where are we now? That's the question we're asking. He said this. This is from the Financial Times. He said the U.S. will lose its role as a global financial superpower in the wake of the financial crisis. Pierre Steinbrück, the German finance minister, said on Thursday, blaming Washington for failing to take the regulatory steps that might have averted the crisis. The U.S. will lose its status as the superpower of the world financial system. This world will become multipolar with the emergence of stronger, better capitalized centers in Asia and Europe. Mr. Steinbrück told the German parliament, "The world will never be the same again." His were the most outspoken comments by a senior European government figure since Wall Street fell into chaos 2 weeks ago. Later, he told journalists, when we look back 10 years from now, we will see 2008 as a fundamental rupture. I am not saying the dollar will lose its reserve currency status, but it will become relative. The minister, who has spearheaded German efforts to rein in financial markets in the past 2 years, attacked U.S. government for opposing stricter regulations even after the subprime crisis had broken out last summer. Big article on that. We're going to lose our assets to other nations. They're going to come in, and you got nations out here who are kind of cashed up right now. They're going to get favorable terms when they put their cash into the U.S., and we're not going to own what we once owned. That's just simply the way it's going to be. It is going to be a different world, and after that, you are not the power you think you are. They're going to call the tune, and they will tell you what to do, and pretty soon, they own you. You belong to them, and they'll tell you to come and go like they want you to. You don't have the ability to fight a war anymore. You don't have the ability to protect yourself. It's all going to happen to you. Now, I simply want to put in perspective where we're at today and some pretty bad things. We're on a slide. If I can put it this way to you, it's like my little granddaughter, when I saw her not too long after she first started doing this, she'd get up on the slippery slide, and she'd get up there, and she up at the top, edge closer and closer, closer, can't really go, but yet closer, and then boom, pretty soon she goes, and she has a good time when she does it. But that's where we are. We are on the top of a slide that's about, well, it's about the slide, except it's a pretty long slide, and nothing's going to be the same as it was before. We're all going to pay for it, unfortunately, and you already have. The value of your super, do I need to say more? Okay. You've already paid for it, some of it. You're going to pay for more of it. It's got to be paid for. There's got to be a correction. There's got to be an adjustment. And I'll show you at the feast during this Bible study that there is a correction. There always is, to the right values, always. Always there will be. It has to. It's a law. I don't care how you want to violate them. I don't know how many other regulations you want to remove or institute or whatever to try to get around it. You can't do it. It's always got to come back. What is anything worth? And that's what it's all going to come back to. That's what we're talking about here in Revelation chapter 6. chapter 6, 17. Let's skip on down. For the great day of his wrath has come, who is able to stand? The great day of his wrath. There is a time He's going to step in, and all things are going to come to an end. Chapter 7, verse 1. After these things, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, on the sea, or in any tree. And then I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, "Do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads." And so the day of the Lord is not going to begin until something is done here. He seals the servants of God in their foreheads. In other words, God seals those who are his. He knows those who are his. The seal of God stands sure, as we read in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 19. And all of that is done, and you have a description of that, and I'm not going to get into that in particular in chapter 7. But chapter 8, he opened the seventh seal. There was a silence in heaven about half an hour, and seven angels who stand before God, to them were given seven trumpets. Now here's where the trumpets come in. And here's where God is about to make his presence known, or his himself known. His presence is going to come a little while later when he comes at the seventh one. But you've got seven trumpets that are going to occur first. And then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar and was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne, and the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God, whom the angels, from the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it to the earth, and there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and earthquakes. Let me make this clear. The prayers of the saints are going to have a great deal to do with the beginning of the day of the Lord. Here are God's people who are praying for what? Survival, perhaps. Praying for help, praying for God's will to be done, praying for God's kingdom to come. But the prayers of the saints are going to be answered here. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. You have four of them. Let me just briefly go through them for in about 5 minutes. This is not very difficult. The first trumpet, verse 7, a third of the trees and the green grass was burnt by drought, by fire. It doesn't say, but it's going to happen. The second trumpet, seas are polluted and poisoned in some way, where you have a third of the sea creatures and animals, fish, die. Third trumpet, fresh water is poisoned too, and men themselves die as a result of that. The fourth trumpet is darkness of some kind that they're going to experience. Here now is the beginning of what we call the day of the Lord, the trumpets being blown. Trumpets is something God does. He's blowing them or causing them to be blown, and things are going to happen. The fifth trumpet, starting in chapter 9, and it gives you a little warning here. It says, "Woe, woe, woe," in verse 13, "to the inhabitants of the earth because the remaining blast of the trumpets of the three angels that are about to sound. The fifth angel sounded, chapter 9, verse 1. I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit, and the smoke of a great furnace." And it goes on to describe that. What arises out of the bottomless pit? What arises out of the bottomless pit? Let's define this clearly for you. Let me quote the scriptures. Chapter 13, Revelation, verse 1. Chapter 17, verse 8. Here is chapter 11, verse 7. Just to name three scriptures that tells you what arises out of the bottomless pit. Here is the same political system that began with Rome and continues right through to the very end is going to arise out of the bottomless pit. He is going to make war with men for 5 months. He is not going to kill them, but torment them. It's a kind of warfare that you and I don't know about yet. We haven't experienced it. We can only imagine what it could be. But they're going to do that. And only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads, they're the ones who will not be hurt by it. Which shows that the seal of God on the foreheads of those who were sealed prior to the day of the Lord are exempt or protected from the events of the day of the Lord. That is verse 4. Now, it says they will seek death and will not find it. They have the power, verse 10, to hurt men 5 months. They had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. Verse 12, one woe is past. Still two more are coming after these things. Now, so you have then the beast. The Gentile nations, let me put this in perspective for you. Once the nations of Israel, who have existed in prominence and domination for 200 years, which is an anomaly. Prior to that, it was the Gentile nations all up until that time, and God has fulfilled his promises to Abraham by allowing the two nations of Britain and America to exist, one following the other, that held a peace and a prosperity over the world, and also brought about the religious freedom to where the truth of God could be established, it could flourish for that short period of time. And that's all it had. Because prior to that, all you had were small persecuted groups. Because you had your state and your church that held sway and would not permit anything to happen after Christ and the apostles. And it gradually eroded to where the Church of God simply could not exist in any kind of form or way. And you only saw what you saw here in the mid part and end part of the 20th century was something that was able to come about simply because God fulfilled his promises to the nations of Abraham and allowed that to happen. Through the ability to do it, through the financial structure that was here and the prosperity that he promised them, and also through the laws that allowed the freedom, and then we were able to go to the entirety of the world. Folks, let me tell you something, that time is coming to an end, where the Gentile nations will now come back and form the final beast power that we just read about. And they are going to exercise their type of warfare over the entirety of the world. And I want to tell you something, the work of God is over. That's it. It's part of the day of the Lord. The sealing was done before the day of the Lord. And once that day of the Lord happens, you now have a time of darkness of Gentile nations oppressing the world, ruling with a totalitarian rule. And will exercise complete and total domination over the world where they can. And there's not one thing we can do about it except survive. And I'm not saying we as a church, I'm talking about we as the Anglo-Saxon people that God has raised to prominence for the past 200 years. They are going to have to somehow do their best to simply survive and live until that last trump of God when they are called out of their own captivity. But it says, Isaiah 27, verses 13 and 14. That will also happen at the last trump. And they're going to be brought out. Now, you have the sixth angel sounding, and you have an army of 200 million horsemen, as it's referred to here, who then rise up as a response to the beast. And as a result of warfare between this army of 200 million men and the beast, you're going to have a third of the people die. That's what it says. Don't apologize for those figures. They're in the Bible. They're there. That's it. Chapter 15, you have the seventh angel sounding, And they said, now, if you think the other ones were bad, listen to this one. The third woe was coming quickly after that. Then there were loud voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever. And so, here is the time. This is it. He returns. We find him pictured in chapter 14 and verse 1 on Mount Zion with the saints. We find then he's going to pour out plagues upon those who still want to go along with the beast and don't recognize him. And then we find a final battle that culminates in Revelation chapter 19 that's called the Battle of Armageddon, and where you're going to have the final defeat of the nations, and then you're going to have Christ ruling over the earth. However, the next event, which we will observe then, is the Day of Atonement, in which the devil himself will be locked up for 1,000 years. And that's why we observe the Feast of Tabernacles and the Day of Atonement, of course, to picture those important events. So we have here then the important events symbolized in the holy days. But we have to understand this age is over whenever those trumpets are blown. Christ steps in. He begins to pour out the trumpets, his actual bodily return, his appearance, his presence then will come at the seventh trump, which will also happen simultaneously with the resurrection of the dead, as we've already heard. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 1, let me conclude here. Christ's commentary, which I'm not going to have time to get to, in Matthew 24, is very instructive. But I simply will mention that it is his own commentary on the prophecies. And the important thing he wants you to know as a result of those prophecies. Paul gives us then further instruction in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, in which he continues on after chapter 4 that Scott quoted with reference to the resurrection of the dead at the trump of God and those who are alive and remain. Now he says this. This is once again a commentary, or you might say something he wants you to understand about what's going to happen. But concerning the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. Well, Christ already explained it, Matthew 24. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. Now, it says the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Now, when Jesus, well, let me just say to the people of the world, that is probably so, but he's wanting to make you understand that for you, it should not be as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them when labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness that this day should overtake you as a thief. Where's the emphasis here? It is you. That this day should overtake you. You should know when it is about to happen, and so therefore I wanted to put you into the picture as to where we could be. We are at the top of the slippery slide, ready to slide down that slippery slide to where once the nations of Israel are oppressed and suffer a captivity, and the Gentile nations have oppressed them, taken over their inheritance, and put them into captivity, this is when the day of the Lord will begin. Because God says, now I'm stepping in. Okay, it's over. He says, my people have learned. They have gone through the captivity. They have gone through their decline. They understand, and they have repented. And he's going to make himself known, and he's going to bring them out of a captivity. But let me just make that clear in case we didn't get this. Is that the day of the Lord begins once the decline of Israel and the captivity of Israel, and that is tribulation upon Israel, has occurred. Jacob's trouble is there. And the Gentile nations have taken over and rule the world with oppression. And that's the financial system that you see in Revelation 18. It's called Babylon, by the way. That will really come to bear with that particular system. God will destroy that. And so he steps in with the trumpets. And does anybody have a trumpet? We can complete it. Boy, that sure woke you up, didn't it? Now, many people won't know what will happen. But what we're saying these things so that when it happens, we will be prepared. As I suggested before, it doesn't matter that we said them 4, 5, 6 decades ago. We did. We said these things. And if they didn't come to pass and we didn't do anything about them, what is Jesus going to say to us? He said, well, I told you 60 years ago. Now, those folks who heard it 60 years ago aren't here. 50 years ago. Some in the 60s did hear it 40 years ago. I heard it 40 some years ago. I heard this. We haven't changed that story yet. It's still there. And it's going to happen. It's kind of interesting that 7 years ago to the month, we had an attack on New York and the Pentagon. Two symbols of power in the United States, economic and military. Economic in New York, military with the were centered at the Pentagon. 7 years to the month, we have had the greatest financial crisis we have had since the Great Depression in terms of the market and the number of points that were lost this morning when we woke up. Now you need to understand how Christ speaks of this. You're going to wake up one morning, it's all going to happen. The people of God will be prepared. They will know it's coming, and they'll be ready. To them it will be as a thief. To you it does not have to be as a thief. I'm not talking about the literal return of Jesus Christ. I think you're going to know that well enough. I'm talking about the first trumpet, the day of the Lord, because when that happens, then it all happens. This age is over. Now you have some things that are happening that portend some very serious issues for our nations in the near future. We're moving inevitably toward a place to where these trumpets are going to be blown. But those of us who observe the day of trumpets, we observe it in its seriousness and with its full meaning, understand.